following tape of Direct Voice is made up of extracts from Direct Voice tape recordings taken of Stephen Ward after he passed over. He has been a regular communicator and comes through to a lady who wishes to remain anonymous, but she sits regularly with the same medium as we do, and she has very kindly allowed us to take copies of these tapes of hers. Stephen Ward gives wonderful philosophy and also tells a lot of what he has found out on the other side of life.
Hello, Stephen.
Yes.
Hello.
You just dropped in for a little chat.
Oh, good.
And I'm not going to shout.
Yes.
Because I've discovered that if I exert myself too much,
yes,
it's much more difficult to hold on for any length of time,
yes,
and hold a reasonably intelligent conversation.
Yes.
If I sort of relax and you relax,
yes,
and I don't sort of, well, exert myself too much other than to make myself reasonably heard, you know, I mean, sort of, if I sort of burst in, you know, which I have done, I think, you know, it sort of, in some way, sort of eats up the power. Since I've been here and
yes,
been able to see shows of, well, all kinds, anything that I might see on your side would look pretty, in comparison, pretty tawdry, I suppose, and yet it was very lovely to look at. I'm quite sure that what I saw of it, but it just didn't mean anything somehow. It had no substance. That's what it really amounted to.
Ah, yes.
You see, here everything is substance. It
yes,
really is, but when people think of this world, they think of it as an insubstantial world, if they think of it at all.
Yes.
And actually it's just the reverse. This is the substantial world, and yours is the insubstantial. And the only thing in your world that really makes it in a sense substantial are people's thoughts and characters. In other words, the real person underneath the veneer of the facade, even people who are not so nice, perhaps, but at least that is the real part of them. That's what I'm really trying to say.
Yes.
And that's the only part of you that you bring here. And therefore, that is obviously the substantial. At least it is substantial in as much as it's the only thing that really makes a person, it's the only thing that really adds up at all. I mean, you can put on all sorts of outer shell, and you can give all sorts of ideas and impressions by your actions or by things you may say when on earth, but it may still not be the real person. It still not isn't the substantial person. That the insubstantial that people create to either create an impression or to obtain their own way in some mm-hmm. shape or form. In other words, the extraordinary thing is that I see now your world as if it were in a sense insubstantial. It's not a real world anymore for me. The only real thing about it is are the people's natures, the people's characters,
mm-hmm.
their personalities. These are the things that exist there together.
Yes, those stand out for you.
These are the tangible things.
Yes, yes.
And therefore, when I come back to Earth, although I do see, of course, and this is a very interesting point, I think, I have learned now not only to be able to see with my, I really use the term my own eyes, which in a sense is true, but what would be much more correct to say within my own soul, but I've also been able to see through the eyes, or perhaps more correct to say, through the thoughts and the impressions of others. It's most fascinating because sometimes, for instance, I can stand behind a person and I can deliberately lock myself out in a strange kind of way which I couldn't even begin to describe, and I can take on or take from, if you like, the individual I'm interested in something of themselves, and therefore I put myself in their position that I can see things from their aspect or their mind.
Yes.
And by doing that I'm able to discover the reality, shall we say, of that particular individual. When I first, for instance, when I come back to Earth, I may, for instance, be walking on the street, or shall we say, passing along the street, and somebody may be coming towards me.
Yes.
And I'm not in tune with that person because I haven't made any attempt to enter into their sort of individual personality or their mental state. And I feel it would be interesting to know what that person is really like. And so I sort of move with them, whichever way I can put this, and sort of try to enter their thought force or their thoughts in such a way that I'm able to discern what they're thinking and what their inner self is really like. And it's very revealing because I find that the vast majority of people, deep down within themselves, there is so much that is good. And yet outwardly, I'm not saying they're doing things necessarily bad, I don't quite mean that, but often people are building up a form of defense, I suppose it is, against the world. Because it seems to me, as I see the world now in a different light, perhaps, I see the world as a place which has a condition or an atmosphere which has taken on through generations of thoughts, which of course thoughts having led to actions, and in consequence leaving behind an atmosphere or condition, not only, for instance, just for the house, not only perhaps even with a church or even a theatre, but with the world en masse. It's an extraordinary thing how people, without even realizing it, are sensitive and facing up to a world which man himself has brought into being through generations of wrong thinking and action, a world which is very hard, very difficult, very complex, where there is all manner of, you might say, temptations, not the temptations in themselves sometimes necessarily bad, because even in temptation, sometimes a lesson can be learned and good can come from it, and I think that to some extent it's necessary. I'm not excusing evil, and I'm not even admitting it in some senses, but what I'm trying to say is this, that it is a natural thing for man as he grows, so it seems to me. In other words, as he becomes more conscious of your world, as he begins to become more adult and more aware, more able to assess, put it like that, the conditions in which he finds himself, so the better part of himself, it becomes more and more pushed into the background, more hidden, and he builds up a sort of barrier, as a wall of protection, which life has made him build and create artificially, which he doesn't really want and which he probably loathes. The average person loathes often being sometimes as he is, but unfortunately the circumstances of life make it so.
Yes.
This is not an excuse, but this is something which it seems to me that man has got into it's as if a man has got into a trap and he just can't escape.
Yes.
And all the time he's waiting for someone to release him.
Yes.
And of course he doesn't know how to get out. He doesn't know how he can be released, and in consequence often goes through life living, you might say, almost a lie to himself.
Yes.
This is the vicious circle of life, and it seems to me that it's something which is going to be very difficult to change. And until man himself discovers or rediscovers his true self and allows his true nature, his true conscious self to assert itself. You see, it's something which man himself has unfortunately allowed himself to get into as a condition of which he's struggling. All the time it seems to me that man, in a sense, is struggling, trying to burst the bonds. In other words, he feels fettered and he feels chained, he's chained in all sorts of different ways. He's changed by orthodox thinking, he's changed by the standard of life, which is often artificial, he's changed by even the social setup in which he finds himself, and he has to conform, he has to bow down to authority, which sometimes within himself he rebels against. In other words, man is all the time struggling and fighting and trying to exert himself. But invariably, the average man gives in and just accepts, and he becomes, in consequence, often a very dull, well, you might say almost a clod. Mm. But the point is that it seems to me that until man himself can truly find himself and begin to exert himself, and it seems to me the only way he's going to do that is by the realization of the power that's within him. And when he realizes the substance which is deep-rooted in all human beings, and he begins to exert that something which is so vital, when he becomes to become, you might say, a free man, I don't mean that he doesn't have to still conform in certain ways. Of course, he has to. There must be some kind of law and some kind of order in life, but the natural law and the natural order, if one were to follow those laws, and the spiritual law which is inherent in all human beings, because man is a spiritual being, obviously, while yet on earth, but he's so submerged in his true self that he hardly knows it or recognizes it. And if he is a religious man, he doesn't necessarily, because of that, really find the truth. Unfortunately, it seems to me that often a so-called religious man, instead of being released from within himself or being enlightened or really truly, you might say, spiritually uplifted, is often penned up even more, because he learns or accepts all sorts of things which in themselves are very restricting and which sometimes are so artificial and have no true meaning or reality in themselves, and he lives another kind of false life. In fact, sometimes it seems to me that the very so-called religious man is more caged up than perhaps the average man who has no particular religion. To me it's all very fascinating, because I go here and I go there, and I take an interest in that person, and I take an interest in this person, and there may be, for instance, very different in so many different ways, and they're both fascinating nevertheless, and I have seen such extraordinary things happening with people, and particularly people, for instance, who are endeavouring to break the bonds, and who are endeavouring to find truth, for instance, not only truth in regard to life beyond death, or spiritism, whatever you like to call it, but truth in regard to themselves, from the point of view of how they themselves can live a life which is more harmonious, more generous in a sense, you might say, that they can feel more free, and that they can be more faithful to their inner self. It seems to me that so many people are living, I was going to use the term, a lie. In a sense, that's very true, because you have so many people in life who, if you were to really dig down deep, are quite different to what they often think they are, or even what impression they may give to others. And so many people feel they must say this, or they must do that, because it's expected of them, because, you know, it's the thing to do. Yeah. In other words, they have to conform. They have to conform to the pattern. They have to conform to society. They have to conform to the class in which they find themselves, or which they were born, which in many ways is quite stupid, because they are living, in a sense, artificially. They are living, in a sense, rather like puppets, and they have no true life of their own. So many people give in too quickly and too easily, and are afraid to be different, afraid to accept the fact that they are as they are, and be themselves, and becoming, in consequence, interesting individuals or interesting people. They seem to me as if they come out of, you might say, in the same mold. And it's a bit, not only just education. I know education, in a sense, can bring people out in a sort of similar mold, but it's deeper than that, and it's much more real than that. It's something very fundamental. People imitate each other, and that's why I think it's such pity, because if you take the animal kingdom, even the animal kingdom, in certain respects at least, don't necessarily imitate each other. But if you take what is generally termed one of the lowest forms of animal life, for instance, you Well, you take, for instance, the various tribes of monkeys. We know there are many different kinds of monkeys, and we know that, for instance, that they differ. A monkey, perhaps in one country, of a certain tribe or a certain group, may differ very much from another. And yet, fundamentally, there is a difference. And yet, at the same time, if you watch a lot of monkeys, you find that they imitate each other. And they're very inclined to imitate. And for instance, if a human being goes and stands in front of a cage of monkeys, and the individual, for instance, pulls faces at it, the monkey would probably do the same. In other words, they haven't reached the stage of evolution yet that they can form such strong individual characters. But nevertheless, even so, they have got characters of their own. And for instance, you take a horse or a dog, you find that as you go up the scale of the animal kingdom, that you get a greater sensitivity and a greater character, a greater sort of personality and so on. But it seems to me that the human being who often pulls faces at the monkey and thinks the monkey is very ignorant is in some ways even more stupid than the monkey.
Well, I think the human being imitates just exactly like monkeys.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Look, in society, it's a thing to do, to follow a pattern.
Yes.
And really, man was never intended that he should follow a pattern, that he should be like the man next door, and he should be all the time copying or imitating and accepting just anything that is suggested to him. So he becomes, in a sense, like a sheep. What I feel so strongly is that it isn't until man himself realizes that he has with himself an individual spirit, and I think this is very important, because there are some cops on your side who seem to assume that over here we lose our personality, or that we lose our individuality, that we cease to be individuals, which is completely and absolutely untrue, because I have met all manner of types of people here, and they're all very strong individuals, and it's because of their evolution, I put it like that, that they've been able to discard a lot of the stupid ideas which were often forced upon them on Earth. In other words, for the first time, I think it is, that you begin to emerge here in a fuller sense, and you do become even more of a personality. I mean, you take someone like, well, take Bernard Shaw, or anybody who, when on Earth, was a strong personality, and probably a very brilliant one, someone who exerted themselves, who was not afraid to be themselves in the fullest sense. Those are the people who really are, in my opinion, the more progressed people.
Yes.
It's, you see, the whole thing is to know what the true meaning of the word spirit, or indeed for that matter, spirituality means.
No.
Because spirit is not an insubstantial thing, it's a very substantial thing. And spirituality is not the wishy-washy religious conception that the average person has of it. Spirituality really means, as far as I see it, a higher degree of intelligence that responds to the infinite, and it is that tremendous power which is for good, which gives man all the capabilities and the opportunities and the discernment that must come with it, that makes man a personality that is evolved.
Yes.
If one's going to stay a clot, I mean, if one's going to stay, as often so many people appear to, as they are on Earth, in spite of their religion, in spite of their so-called spirituality, then there's no advancement. It seems to me that they're just standing still. And this stupid conception that people have, that when you die, that you come here, because you've been good, as the world's idea of good anyway, and that you've followed out certain ideas and certain creeds or dogmas or whatever it may be that's been forced upon you, and you've accepted often through fear or because it's a thing to do to go to church, it's a thing to do to be so-called respectable. Respectability never gets anyone anywhere. I think the people who can afford sometimes to be a little disrespectful in a sin. In some ways, they're exerting their personality much more, and they're certainly making an impression. It may not necessarily please everybody, but then again, it's only because some people, and a lot of people rarely, have got the wrong idea of what is good and what is bad. I mean, natural laws, natural inclinations, which are common to the whole human race, and not only that, but to every aspect of life on Earth, whether it's the insect, or whether it's the monkey, or whether it's the camel, or whatever it is, or the trees, or the flowers, birds, bees, call them what you like, or whatever it may be, all that follow nature's instinct, all that follow nature's path, all that form and endeavor to follow the plan that is obviously of an enormous conception of life, it's normal. The people who are not, as the world sees it, always normal are considered, well, they're considered beyond the pale, or there's something radically wrong with them, or they're mentally sick. In other words, if you are real, if you are genuinely following nature's path and nature's way, which, after all, man is an animal, fundamentally, but he's a higher form of animal, he's given a greater intelligence. But the trouble is that so many people consider themselves intelligent, in my opinion, they're not really intelligent at all. In fact, they're sometimes, on fundamental issues, they're quite stupid. And they have such strange ideas, which, when you really get down to rock bottom, just don't make sense at all. And these are, although people never understand, at least I doubt if they were the generation, these are the things which prevent man from really expanding and then really growing in stature, mentally and spiritually. We must fundamentally, in a material condition, which has a spiritual significance, which it has, you've got to live, in a sense, with nature. You cannot thwart nature, you cannot go against nature. If you do, then what happens? What is happening in your world? You see it all around and all about you. You see all sorts of tragedies. You all see all sorts of things happening to people. People who are twisted inside. People who are unhappy for various reasons. People who are cold, and people who in themselves are afraid to give, who are afraid to let their hair down, who are afraid to be normal, afraid to be natural. In fact, you get all manner of illnesses. You get neurosis, you get physical illnesses, you get all sorts of things happening to mankind because he sometimes, and quite often, fights natural instincts,
yes,
and natural,
yes,
laws. And if you're going to have a free life and a happy life, and you're going to have a mind that's able to think, and also by thinking able to understand, and by being able to understand progress, and by being able to progress achieve spiritual and mental stature, you've just got to release yourself and accept yourself, and you've got to know yourself. One of the greatest laws I've found out is to know yourself. And when you begin to know yourself, you begin to understand not only yourself, but you begin to understand life. You begin to understand people. You begin to see the reasons why people are as they are. And of course, naturally, you want to help, if you can, to change them. And then comes the most difficult part of all, in trying to help people, in trying to change them. Sometimes you come up against a brick wall, and sometimes you get reviled in consequence because people will turn around and say that you are not conforming. As soon as you stop conforming, then there's something wrong with you. But it's the people that are always conforming that are the mentally sick and the physically ill and sometimes spiritually weak. People don't seem to understand that when you conform, quite often, you are opposing nature. You are opposing even the spiritual instincts and the spiritual life. People seem to think a spiritual life is something where you just worship God, and at the same time you try to do certain things which you think God would have you do, which in a sense may be good, but at the same time, if you're doing things against your true nature, if you're accepting things against your reason, if you're doing things which you are doing through fear, if you're doing things because you think that by so doing over here, when you eventually die, you will make a nice little lavender nest for yourself. It's all so stupid. You see, I've seen, as I have told you, since I've been over here, not only from my own aspect of life here, but I'm still very keenly interested in people on your side, because I feel if I can help them, if I can impress them, if I can help them to rid themselves of their phobias and their fears, help them to come to terms with themselves and accept themselves and be themselves, then they will be free inasmuch as they begin to act differently and think differently, and their minds will be open, their lives won't be twisted, and in their whole aspect will change to such an extent that they will learn. Gradually, it will be very gradual, of course it must be, but they will learn the path of wisdom. And since I've been going to lectures here and I've been listening to some of the great philosophers and some of the great teachers, I'm beginning to learn more about the true path of wisdom and the way in which one can release oneself so that one can throw out all the stupid ideas and the stupid thoughts, and one can sort of get rid of all the old lumber in the attic and really clean up my house, as it were, and get new furniture in. You know what I mean?
Yes.
There's so much that one can accept and readily take to oneself once you get rid of all the old lumber. And that's what I'm trying to do, and I'm finding it enthralling and exciting and fascinating, and I feel for the first time I'm really living. I can't tell you what it means to me. I feel as if I'm living a life which for the first time is full of promise. There's tremendous scope. There's nothing that can hold me back, because I've freed myself of any phobias or any fears I may have had. I can see myself as I was, and I can see myself as I am. And although there are certain aspects of myself that I regret, as one must, even in the regrets that I may have, I can see that there was something that was learned. You see, that is the point when you come here. You look back on your life, and you see it, and you can realize it. It's true when they talk about the Book of Life, because we all carry it around with us. We don't even know, perhaps, when on earth, that it's there. But it's there, all right, because I've seen it with other people. As I've said, when I've become interested in an individual, it's just as if I can read them. It's as if I can know their whole life. I can see them as they really are, their good points, their bad points, where they went wrong, why they went wrong, all the influences that were brought to bear on them, they're all reticent. And once you come here, you can see yourself, and you can release a lot of the lumber that you've gathered around you and carried on your back and nearly bent your double when on earth. I can see it, I know it, it's fascinating, because I've been able to release myself of the burdens of many of the things which held me down. I know. I can see the dual personality that I was, as indeed most people are. And indeed, going back to what I said in the beginning, it's true that everyone, in a sense, is living a lie. Everyone, in a sense, is a dual personality. If only they can release themselves of all the stupidities and the phobias and the fears, and know themselves to be uncluttered from all the rubbish that one accumulates in so many different ways. And I feel that this truth, this fascinating, wonderful thing called life, and it really is life here. If only people can understand what it means to die and to live, and to know that by living here you really are existing in a sense so fully that the words could never begin to depict or describe it. People think of your world as a reality. In a sense it has reality, as it must, because you are still, well, you are, of course, spiritual beings in embryo. You are there to learn, you are there to experience, and you have within yourself the power to overcome. It's also true, the fundamental teachings of the great teachers, not only Christ, but Buddha and Confucius, and all the fascinating creatures and people that I'm gradually beginning to know. I've been listening and I've been learning, and I realize the fundamental truths are truths which will never change. But it's man that's twisted the truth. It's man that's built up false ideals, false idols, and false impressions and ideas and ideologies and all sorts of things. Man has cluttered all the truth out with lots of dross and stupidity, and made people bow and scrape, and God knows what they haven't done over the centuries of truth. We want to release it. We want to bring truth back to the world. We want to make people see and know and understand, and in consequence become freed of all these stupidities which hold man back. I can't tell you how excited I feel. I feel as if I'm on the very verge of a tremendous adventure. No one need fear dying. Dying is the door that opens up for all those who will see it and press it a little and push it and walk through it. I can't tell you what it's meant to me. But first, when I first came here, I was depressed and unhappy. I was even a bit resentful in a strange kind of way. And that was something out of unusual for me. I never usually had bitterness for anyone, but oh, I don't know, I had such a rotten time in some senses. But all that's past. Now I'm happy. The good point is that what is truth today? May still be, in a sense, truth, but it may be only a scrap or a particle of the real truth. I mean, there's always room for new knowledge, new experience. One's always progressing and, in consequence, learning more. And that which seemed a miracle yesterday, when you begin to know the answer to it and how it comes into being, then it's no longer a miracle, you see.
No, yes, quite right. All you do is say things so well, Stephen.
That's why I think, really, that one has no right to form very strong opinions one way or the other. Oh, I think that's why one's mind must always be flexible, why one must always be ready to accept new knowledge or new experience or new truth as it comes along. And that which you have for today suffices and helps and is a comfort. But it doesn't mean to say because that which you have today is the whole. It may be that which is permitted to know at that moment or which is good for one to know or experience, but it's only like the door being opened ajar. But tomorrow or the next day, the door may be pushed a little further and you can see a little further into the room. And what was a little dark before becomes a little lighter. I think one has to look at it that way.
That's what exactly has been happening to me all these years.
Well, sure.
With this medium and the communicators. Exactly.
I mean, the point is that you can... I think it's well, in a sense, it's like medicine, I suppose.
Yes.
I mean, the first dose doesn't have any effect at all. Second dose, you begin to think it's having an effect, and it probably, in a sense, is. And the third dose, you feel a little better, and so on. But it doesn't mean to say you're going to chuck the bottle away, and you're well immediately after the first half a dozen doses. I mean, the point is, you may still need more.
Yes.
But the point is to know your doctor and make sure he's giving you the right stuff.
That's it.
And once you've got the right doctor from this side and you're getting the right medicine, take it in small doses, and it's good for you.
Yes.
If you're trying to swallow a lot all at once, probably kill you.
Yes. Quite right. As they always used to say to me, especially Dr. Marshall, time is not ripe yet.
Well, in any case, time is an illusion. And although, of course, I suppose it's human nature when you're on Earth and time seems, well, in a sense, very important, particularly perhaps if you're getting a bit older, and you think, well, I may not be here very much longer myself. But the point is, you feel you want to know as much as you can before you come. All that's very human. But then again, time itself is an illusion.
I've had to make a break here because he mentioned something personal.
I think the important thing is, in the initial stages of coming here, is to put those things behind you, not to think about them, not to hold on to the thoughts which evidently and certainly seem to hold one back. I think it's the whole idea is to release yourself from many things which you soon begin to realize have no meaning here. What had a meaning on earth and had a place no longer has a meaning or a place here, and in consequence, as you change in your outlook and your desires, you sort of desire things which somehow are so natural because they are the realities, and it's the sort of realities that you are seeking and the realities that you are understanding and clinging to, and they sort of lift you out of your old self and you appreciate so much more fully because you can see and understand these things that matter more fully. They become a living reality to them, whereas once perhaps they were a kind of dream or they were aspirations, shall we say, you had on earth, which under the circumstances of material conditions they seemed almost impossible to bring into being. Here the obstacles seem to be removed. And one does that oneself to some extent, but nevertheless, you come to realize that it's the realities that you're seeking, the realities that you're clinging to, and all the old things, often things which seemed realities of a kind, no longer seem so. In fact, they seem something which, important though it must have been in many instances on earth, no longer means anything here. You lose so much that no longer matters.
So of course I should think this is quite natural, because you are so hampered on earth, whereas once you get your realization of your surroundings and so on, you're not hampered anymore.
Well, that's the
just
point.
Just allow the freedom to go on.
You see, when you first come here, you're still very much as it were, thinking, and indeed you still are very much in the material sense, clinging to these old ideas and thoughts.
Yes.
And it's not easy to release yourself from them. And to you, shall we say, for the moment, they still have an important part to play. You still cling to those things. And the thing to do, of course, is to realize that they are no longer important. It's not easy to release yourself from these things. And I think also the circumstances of one's passing and the conditions of just before one's passing also play a very important part. That is why I should imagine that the gradual process of dying, which so many people dread, in its own strange way, is nature's way of helping an individual to gradually release their hold upon many of the things which seemed important at the time, but which really have no importance. Over here, you gradually drift, as it were, into this world, and you lose consciousness. And the point is that I think that it so much depends on the individual, of course. I mean, for instance, if you know about this subject, if you realize that death is a gateway to a great life, fuller life, with greater opportunity and greater love and greater understanding, greater tolerance. In other words, if you realize that this is a world where love predominates and that you will be surrounded by people who love also in return, and that they are people not only that you've known, but people who come out of the sheer love of coming to help you and assist you and to show you the way, as it were, the whole atmosphere changes because of this. But and for a person who understands this truth before they come here, it's a different matter altogether. But the average person who doesn't know, who is in fear of dying, who dreads the idea of dying, and clings to perhaps some sort of creed or dogma which they cling to, and it doesn't necessarily give them the satisfaction or the assurance they need. And then again, of course, many people have no faith, no belief at all, and it's very difficult for them. But you see, this truth, this realization of life after death, when it's understood properly on your side, certainly must mean that that person, when they pass, will have the most tranquil of passings, and that they will automatically know what to expect, and they will be received in such a way that there will be none of the difficulties that so many people have when they come here. It's very difficult for some people when they first come.
Oh dear, I wish I could take this recording over to all of my friends. Oh.
You see, after all, what is so important is that a person is as he or she thinks. And if they have strong fixed ideas, those ideas are not easily shifted, even on this, in this side when they first come, in spite of the fact that they awaken, you might say, to a new life. They are still, in a thought sense, clinging to thoughts and ideas and religious convictions and all sorts of sort of strange feelings and ideas which have no bearing on the reality of life here. In other words, they cling to these preconceived ideas which are a hindrance to them instead of a help.
Yes.
And even when people, for instance, go to them and talk to them or try to convey to them the truth and the realization of what has transpired, they won't necessarily always accept it. In fact, they reject it, and they often think people have come to help them, even though it should be obvious to any intelligent person that that person that comes is a good person. They, because of their narrow concepts and belief, they will sort of push that person aside and reject that person and won't accept that person at all, and indeed in some instances look upon that person as a devil or somebody who's come to mislead them.
Yes.
Because so many people, you'd be surprised, have this strong idea that they are going to be reborn, and they often are under the impression that they are going to have a physical body in a material world, and that there's going to be a great day of resurrection for them, and that they are in some peculiar way selected, that they are in some peculiar way different, and everybody else that doesn't think as they think, they assume that these persons are evil or bad spirits who come to try and take them from the right course. And that is the great trouble with a lot of these people. There are whole communities of people who live in a complete dream world, you might say, of their own, where they have their religious beliefs, where they worship, where they sing their hymns, and they have their prayer meetings, and in fact they conduct a life here which in some ways is very like their religious life on earth. And they really believe that they have been selected to be in a certain place, and they live in a world which for them, let me explain, is a world of great reality, and which for them is a world of complete happiness, because into that world of theirs, in a sense, no one else can enter. No matter who the person is who wants to help them, it's extremely difficult to combat this thought force which they give out, which is so strong and so powerful. They really believe that they are in a world which is specially constituted and made for them until such time as they will be resurrected, brought back onto the earth, and become God's elect. Of course, I'm talking here about the very narrow sect of people,
yes,
and they are obviously the worst. But I have been taken to one of these places, and I've been able to witness this life which they live, which for them is a very happy state of existence. I wouldn't like it to think it isn't, because it is. Because they are living in a world which is to them as real as yours is to you or mine is to me, and everything that happens in that world of their own making, of their own thoughts, is all as they desire and wish it. And they live in a world which to them is a perfected form of existence. And actually anyone who goes there to try and talk to them or help them or to try to draw them out of it, really they're so rejected and so despised. In fact, you'd be surprised how sometimes people who go to help them are prayed for by these people, that they will be released from what they consider their sins, and that they will be allowed to become good as they are good. In other words, they really honestly think that they are good living people, and that they are God's specially elected disciples or peoples, and that they will be able to return to earth eventually when the world comes to an end. Of course, I'm talking about a very special type of sect of people, but it's a vast place. I mean, I'm not talking about a few hundred people, I'm talking about literally thousands upon thousands,
yes,
of people,
yes,
who live in a world or a part of a world which is as real to them as yours is to you or mine is to me. But this is, of course, their own world, which they themselves have created, which they helped to create when they were on earth, and which they continue to make a reality until such time as, of course, they may change their thoughts, which will start with some, may take centuries, I don't know, but it's quite possible.
Do you ever argue with them, or...?
Well, I haven't, because, quite frankly, I feel myself at the moment we're not capable of sorting myself out properly without trying to sort other people out. I feel it would be rather presumptuous of me in a sense.
Yes.
But I'm terribly curious and I'm terribly interested, and I suppose it's my natural curiosity, and also from that possibly I shall learn. Well, of course I shall learn, and it will help me tremendously in my own progress. I am interested to go anywhere that anyone's likely to take me. In fact, the more people are prepared to come up to me and say, oh boy, would you like to go and visit so and so? There's a curious gang down there, you know, or there's this or that happening up there.
Yes.
I'm all for it. I'll go anywhere, because I think that by seeing all these various different peoples and the way they live and the way they think and the way they act, I'm going to learn something.
Oh, yes.
And possibly later on, when I'm more progressed myself and know how to go about things without sort of putting my foot in it, I might be able to do a bit of good for these people, wherever they may be or whoever they may be. I don't want to start moralizing. I don't want to start sort of trying to change anybody. I want to learn more of myself so that in consequence I possibly will change, so that I might in some measure at least be able to do some good somewhere else and help others. But I wouldn't be so, well, as I say, down stupid as to trying. In fact, I wouldn't know what to say to these people yet. I wouldn't know how to deal with these people because, well, frankly, in their own way, they're very powerful.